Hey, it's Chad here, and welcome back into my van, where I'm recording another intro to A Level Deeper podcast. If you didn't know, I do live in a van. My wife and I travel full-time with our dog, Sadie, so I record all these episodes from the back of my van. Or sometimes I record them out in the Red Rocks of Sedona, Arizona, like the last episode with Nate Langley, which if you haven't heard that one, I would definitely recommend that you check out. Today's conversation just fulfilled so much of my curiosity. I wanted to have Nicole Rawl on the show because she's made a lot of intentional decisions in her life to do things differently, especially around the ways in which she parents and raises her three daughters and what she's chosen to do for work and some of the lifestyle choices that she's made. And before you say, well, Chad, I'm not a parent, and so maybe this conversation doesn't apply to me. Hold on. I am not a parent either. This conversation on the surface may sound like a conversation about parenting and a conversation about raising children, but I want you to listen. I'm going to put on a little bit of a different way of thinking and listening, because if you listen very closely, you're going to hear a lot of themes that have nothing to do with parenting. They have nothing to do with raising children. Themes that are about self-belief, themes that are about being told the right way to do something by someone else, and asking the question, well, why? Themes like applying some of these things and thinking for ourselves and making our own decisions. Themes like dealing with judgment and how you should approach that in your life if you do choose to do something and other people, as they do, share their opinions with you. Themes like building ourselves and other people to be critical thinkers and to have a sense of purpose and a sense of passion. Things like the ingredients to success as human beings as we go through life. Nicole has some really interesting perspectives on all of these things, and so I encourage you to really tune in and listen and start asking some of the questions that Nicole started asking in her life for yourself. Especially this question of why. Why should we do it that way? Why is this what someone's recommending that we do? And, well, what if we did it differently? That's really what this conversation is about. It just happens to be presented around the idea of, we talk a lot about parenting because it's something that I do aspire to be a parent someday. I would love to be a father. I think about parenting a lot. But these ways in which we instill these things into our children, well, we could instill them into ourselves and our friends or our family or the people around us or whoever it may be. So I think you're going to find this conversation very applicable to wherever you are in life. All right, at this point, we're just going to hop to it. Here's my conversation with Nicole Rawl.
I feel like I've listened to a few of your podcasts. I feel like I know your beautiful wife. I mean, I listen to her voice almost every day.
I love
and
that.
And so, yeah, I'm feeling very comfortable. And I did her podcast earlier, like I said, or her meditation, because I was like, this is exactly what I need. And I feel very, very good about being here.
What role has, you know, meditation played for you? You said, that was exactly what I need. Tell me about that. What makes you say that was what I need? Why is meditation the thing that maybe helps you kind of calm?
Yeah. Well, I feel like everybody's lives are, including my own, we live very chaotic existences. And even maybe if I had a calmer life, I feel like having the, it's a tool. It's a beautiful tool that I started when I started doing yoga. I was introduced to meditation and just helped me find my center. It's really helped me be a better mom, a better wife, a better human being overall, and like keeping me grounded. Because I just think like there's so much going on in our heads all the time, and it's really hard to sift through everything and find like what's real if you don't have something to pull you back to ground.
So you found like the practice of meditation helps you kind of decipher what is real, what is happening, what is in this moment, or what's the opposite of that?
Yeah. I mean, it just has always been something. Again, I feel like if I didn't have the meditation, I would just be a more reactive person and a less thoughtful person. Some may say I'm an overthinker, and that can be true in some regards, but I would rather be an overthinker than not thinking at all or considering other perspectives around just how to handle any situation that comes up. Like I can be in a very, you know, intense situation. And with the tool of meditation, I feel like I can not react as, and I can respond more. Not every time, but it's definitely becoming a more consistent habit.
Well, fellow overthinker here, I'm a self-diagnosed overthinker for the entirety of my life. What is, you know, actually, I've always kind of considered that, I don't know if it's a bad thing, but I've had kind of a difficult relationship with, you know, overthinking, spending so much time thinking, spending so much time in the head, processing things. I don't know. Sometimes I've viewed that as kind of a bad thing. I had a guest on the podcast recently. His name was Mike Irwin, and he dropped a quote that kind of just changed my perspective a little bit. He said, "Life is a thinking person's game." And I was kind of like, huh, now that's interesting. When you hear that quote, does that resonate with you? Does that make, give you like that same kind of peace that it brings me? Like, oh, maybe this isn't so bad.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not crazy, right? Like, it's a good thing to be thinking. I feel like so many facets of our culture try to tell us what to think, so you don't think for yourself. And I would much rather, again, be an overthinker. Life is kind of a game. And I mean, you're not going to get anywhere if you don't think for yourself. So I really like that quote.
You seem like someone who, to me, it's evident that you do a lot of thinking. You do a lot of reflecting on the life that you want to create for yourself, for your family, for your kids. You know, I was watching a video on your Instagram just recently of, I think it was one of your recent posts of, all of your daughters at work with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're at a photo shoot. They're all there. They're working. They have roles. They all have jobs. They're getting paid to be there. And by the way, they're the ages. How old are they?
10, 8, and 6.
Okay. So we've got 3 sub 10-year-olds that are on the job with you working. I think that sounds like many parents' worst nightmare. I'm thinking to myself, like, I think Nicole might be the coolest mom that I've ever seen. This is awesome. But that to me seems like an example of that's a very intentional thing. Like, there is some thought behind the way that you approach parenting. And I wonder if you could take us, let's start with that example of your 3 daughters coming to work with you. Why? Why would you subject yourself to what seems like pain?
So there's a lot of reasons. And first off, like, I did look for childcare, but it's so freaking hard. And while my kids are with my husband right now, that's not always a feasible thing. Also, it's like culture just really expects women to continue to work. And I think that it's great to have the option. But I personally couldn't imagine having like a 9-to-5 and figuring out where my kids are going to be when one of the biggest priorities to me is, I want to be the one to raise them and I want to spend time with them and I want to create a family culture. And I love entrepreneurship. So I grew up with entrepreneurs. My dad had a construction company. I was the kid, like all of us were always like, how can we build a business? It was just the culture of the family, I guess. And I really want to instill that in my kids too. So the balance of being a mother and an entrepreneur, I really want them to see that example. Not all the time. I can't take them to every job with me. And it was not that easy when they were with me on Friday. I had like several moments where I was like, I should have just got a sitter. I should have tried harder. But at the same time, it's like I have awesome clients and they are so willing to encourage my kids in the roles that I give them. And I feel like it's this whole, like, it's the community aspect, right? Where as a young child, you, in a lot of, in our current culture, you're pushed aside and you're like told, more or less, like, go play and don't be in this space. This space isn't for you. You're not valuable here. And I really don't like that. And I feel like if we include kids in more spaces, we'll have more confident kids at a younger age. I mean, I was fairly confident, I feel like, at some points in my life and, you know, dips and dives through life. But I just feel like them having a purpose and a role and having that feeling of accomplishment at these ages is pretty cool.
I mean, I completely agree. And that's why I think it's so cool. But that doesn't feel like the norm. It doesn't feel like parents, when they have a six-year-old, are thinking, what's their role? And do they feel like they have a purpose? And are they building confidence? You know, it would seem, not that there's a right or wrong approach to this, but like, it would seem like a pretty predictable thing to, okay, you couldn't get childcare. You've got a shoot that you need to go to. You have to work. You bring your three kids, you push them off to the corner, you hand them each an iPad, and they're busy for 2 hours. And if they ask you something, you say, shh, you know, I'm working. You know, we'll talk about that later. Like, not to paint the picture that that's a bad thing, but that just feels like a semi-expected, like, okay, that would make sense of a way that I would kind of expect someone to handle a situation like that. You decided, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have them all be involved in my shoot and have a job and have a role. Just, I mean, why does that feel so important to you?
I really want my kids to learn to be like super present, and I want them to be able to solve their own problems. And if I give them a manageable problem, it's up to them to take that initiative. And I really feel like so many of us walk through life, and then at 30, we're like, wait, what do I like? What do I want to do? Who do I want to be? And I feel like so much of that comes from the conditioning of society where, and, you know, I'm very like, everybody does whatever they think is right. But I definitely feel that if kids at a younger age were exposed to different ways to earn a living, right? Or find a purpose or a craft or a skill that they really enjoy at a younger age, they're going to be light years ahead of me when I was 30, right? So, I mean, right now, I really try to focus on, we've been going through doing, like, they come with me to work sometimes for sure, but I've even been taking them to like the sauna or trying to get them into like yoga and working out with me and meditation. My youngest daughter was with me while I did the throat chakra meditation, and she was in the back doing like the lion's breath, and she passed out, I think, towards the end of the meditation, but she was in it. She was repeating the affirmations. And whether it's my job, the way that I try to take care of my health, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all of these things, when we bring our kids in and expose them to that, it's normal for them then. So they're not like 16 questioning their self-worth, right? They're not 22 and like, God, I have no idea what I'm going to do to create a sustainable living for myself. Of course, like, I do a ton of different things in businesses, but when you have the example of flexibility, of creativity, there's not a problem you can't solve.
I really like that. I don't have kids myself. I hope to someday. And I'm taking notes. I'm learning, and I'm like, wow, yeah, this is really good. I mean, where did you come to some of these conclusions? Is this a personal experience thing? Is this like what led you to believe that this was, because this way of parenting, it feels different. It feels different from what we typically see in society. So what led you to believe that this was the way that you wanted to go about parenting?
Honestly, I I feel like it's just little bits of exposure to different things that, like, I have seen, again, culturally, right? Like, kids attached to iPads or iPhones or the i-whatevers, right? And while I do believe there's a time and a place, like, that was one thing that I was like, I don't like that. Like, I don't want that for my kid. My girls, they can have really wonderful conversations with adult human beings, and they'll pretend to be shy sometimes, but those things are really important to me. And I will say, yeah, for sure, from my childhood experiences in school, being told what I should do and who I should be, I didn't like that. I didn't like that. And I was always in trouble for talking too much, right? Like, so all of these small things, I think and big things I've pulled from my personal experience. And I just really wanted to give my kids another option.
Were you that person? So when you're a kid and you're being told what to do or being told that you talk too much, what was your response to that? Were you the type of person who was like, no, I'm gonna do whatever I want? Or did you think, you know, maybe something's wrong and I need to tone it down or I need to change my actions? What was your response?
I'm pretty sure can I flick off? Like, I was for sure like this. Like, I was like, yeah, right.
No. For those of you listening, that was a double middle finger up.
Which, it's like, I have this very soft side, but then I'm also like, don't tell me what to do. And you can ask my mom and my dad. We butted heads so hard growing up because I was like, you tell me that I can't do something and I'm going to show you that I can. And yeah, so it serves me well though, because there were so many things that I was told that I couldn't or shouldn't, that weren't, like, you know, too dangerous, that I did. And I'm a better person for doing those things and for trying those things.
Is that kind of what happens, is you build some evidence and you build some self-belief of like, well, this person said not to do that, but then I went and did it. And now it seems like it brought me some kind of, you know, positive outcome. It was that kind of the process? Like, oh, okay, so maybe I should continue to lean into this whole, I'm going to do what I think is right. Or let me ask you this way. How do you go about, if people are telling you to do something, and what is it? Is it a thought? Is it a feeling? What is directing you to say, you know what? I hear what they're saying, but that doesn't seem like what I'm wanting to do. And so I'm going to go do something different. Walk us through what's going on there. Take us inside Nicole's brain and dissect this a little bit for us.
I just think I've just always had a little bit of a rebellious spirit. And my parents, they always really drove home, like, if everybody else is doing it, should you be doing it too? And so I feel like I've definitely applied that to a lot of things, where it's forced my mind to, if somebody says do X, Y, Z, but why? Why should I do that? What if I don't? Let me see if I don't, what happens? And then maybe, you know, if it's something that I can, like, go back and do that way later. Or I feel like there's so many ways to exist. And when the masses are telling you that you should fit into this box, I don't like that. And it really, like, my whole being screams no. And as far as educating my kids, when it became time for them to, like, start looking at preschools or friends of mine whose kids were the same ages, they're like, where are you going to send the kids? And, like, my whole body was like, what? Why would I send them anywhere? I want to be with them. I'm their, you know, I'm their mom. I'm their, and it's not in, like, this possessive, they're mine. It's just like, it's my job to guide them. And I just didn't want to hand that off. And I'm so, so grateful that I haven't. And I'm very grateful for the support system that I found, and the community that I've found. And that is a huge part, I feel like, of having that local community that makes you feel like you're not so crazy when so many people straight up are like, you're crazy.
I know what's probably happening right now. You just heard the ad music play. You're starting to tune out exactly what I'm saying so you can skip this ad and get back to the conversation, and I'm going to encourage you not to. Because if you continue to skip this ad in order to get back to the conversation, then at some point there may not be a conversation for you to get back to. Okay, now that I have your attention, that might have been a little bit exaggerated. Likely, I'm not going to stop producing this show, but you can help me make this show a lot more viable and so I can continue doing this into the future. Fun fact, I don't make any money from this show. In fact, I actually pay in order to create these episodes on a weekly basis. And while that may not exactly seem like your problem or your issue, if you like meaningful conversations like the ones that we have here, well, then it is your problem. I could use your help in the form of financial support, specifically, in order to keep this show going and continually invest back into creating it. Here's another fun fact. If everyone listening to this episode were to donate the single cost of a cup of coffee, I could probably do this as a full-time job. That is a dream and a vision I have for myself one day, and I want this to be like PBS or NPR, where it's funded by the viewers. I'm imagining a show where we, together, collectively, decide that these meaningful conversations are important to us, and we don't rely on outside help or advertisers in order to keep them coming on a weekly basis. So yes, this is a long-winded way of saying I'm asking you for money. If you're in a place where you feel comfortable doing so, I am asking you to make a small donation to support the show. You can do that by following the link that is in the show notes of this episode to a place called Buy Me a Coffee. Now, by buying me a coffee through this platform, you're not actually buying me a coffee. It's just kind of a mental construct to make this transaction of money a little bit more tangible. Thank you in advance for considering supporting me, supporting the show, and for supporting meaningful conversations like the one we're about to get back to right now. So to be clear, you homeschool your three girls, right?
Yeah. If you have to put a label on me, it would be more unschool, life school.
Okay. Tell us about what that means.
So I don't use a standard curriculum.
Okay.
I do not check in with the state. I do not adhere to, well, she's 7, so she should do X, Y, and Z. Well, she's 10, so, ooh, if she's not here, then that means she's here. Like, we all learn at different ages and stages, and everything balances out as long as you have curiosity and creativity. So my kids, they'll ask questions and then we'll dive into that. We will go to the library and find books on it. We'll go out into nature and see if we can find it there. We will go to a museum or a science center. Or we'll create a project around it. And it's not always elaborate. Sometimes it's super simple. And I mean, I mix in resources from online and other friends. But it's like when you're at the grocery store, we read the ingredients on things. We talk about totals. And, you know, there's math involved, which I'm not very good at. So that will be passed off to a tutor as we age. But it's like learning through life versus, okay, sit down, we're doing an hour of math. Sit down, we're doing an hour of this. And like, you know, the sit down, be quiet thing has never felt right for me. And I didn't learn well in that way. And the system that we have, it really makes you feel inadequate. And I don't know if you've ever felt inadequate, but when you're repeatedly like, you're failing, you got a D, you got a C, what's you know, again and again, it does that whole thing where it confirms this lie in your head that you're not smart. And I certainly felt that. And I just was like, I cannot have my kids have that experience.
Hmm. You know, I really resonate with that. It's funny. I would say I could recognize some of the same negative consequences of the traditional schooling system. Although I was actually on the opposite end of things, and I still recognize some of the the detriment that it had to my life. So I was on the opposite end in that I was like the straight A student, and I was going to get A's no matter what, you know, graduate top of my class. But for me, that became, that was what it felt like was right. This is what I'm supposed to do. People seem to really like my parents, people around me, my friends' parents. People seem to really like when I was getting great grades and I was performing well. And then you'd hear, oh, you know, how is Chad doing so well? And I wish my kids were performing better. But just kind of it created this cycle of, I don't know, performing a certain task and being able to do it, you know, a kind of linear task and do it at a very high level to get the grade, to get the report that someone says you did a good job. Mm-hmm. And then in them saying I did a good job, that validates that I did actually do a good job. Not if I thought it was a good job, but this grade. And so it's just interesting. My schooling experience was on the opposite end of things, but I'm maybe thinking about for the first time in seeing some of the effects that that's had on me as like, I still struggle with a lot of self-belief and being able to say, if I think I did a good job, that's enough. I'm constantly looking for that external validation. Like I'm waiting for, you know, like this podcast, I'm waiting for someone to come say, A plus, Chad, this is an A plus show. You know, so it's just, it's interesting to reflect on the way that we're schooled and brought up. I mean, it can have a really big impact.
Huge. I mean, you think about it, you're spending 5 days a week, how many months out of the year, 8 hours a day with these people that are responsible for shaping you. Not only your intelligence, right, but your social structure, your social, you know, culture, whatever that is. You know, I'm not a wordsmith over here, but I think you get what I'm trying to say. When you're in an environment, that's usually what you become, right? And the external validation thing is huge, that you're performing even though you were on the opposite end, like you said, straight A's, which I'm like, man, I tried so hard. But that just wasn't where I was. Even when I like tried so hard, I was a B student at best. And it was so frustrating seeing other people get like the applause and the, you know, pats on the back and the A pluses and all of that. It was like, the shit, like I must be dumb. But I know that I'm not. And so who knows, maybe it was partly the bad grades that was like, you know what, if they don't see how freaking cool I am, I got to see how cool I am. And one of my girlfriends growing up, it was like a high school, like, I forget what it was, but she's like something about, you know, well, nobody else is going to believe in you if you don't. And it was like at, you know, 16, I was like, oh, yeah, you're probably right. But it's the school system, it does kind of condition you to depend on external validation on, and then you leave it and you're still seeking it. And again, that's another huge point that like, I want my daughters to know their worth intrinsically. It's such a thing for me, for them to not seek it through other people.
Yeah. I'm even thinking back to, this has my head just like spinning. I'm thinking back to, you know, even like creative projects in school where you'd write a paper or you'd write a, you know, maybe not even like a research paper, but just like a creative piece, a poem. Mm-hmm. You'd be in art class, you'd create something and then you would get graded on it. One person would decide if this thing that you created was worthy of an A or worthy of a D, you know, whatever their criteria was. And it's just like, as you just think about that, it's like, what a backwards. I mean, that just makes no sense that we would create things and then one person decides if that thing is good or bad or worthy or not worthy. Like, I'm just
kind of bizarre.
It's blown. Yeah.
Dictatorship, right? And that actually reminds me of one of my like favorite terrible stories of my schooling. And I was a senior at this time, and it was literature. And this teacher, we had to like pretend that we were some animal and write a story about it. And I was like, I woke up one day as a dolphin and, you know, the bottom of the ocean. Like, it wasn't really well written. Okay. Like, that's fine. Judge me away. But she circled this line. So I said something like, I saw another group of dolphins and I swam at, or I followed after them. And she circled, followed them or followed after them and was like, sounds just like you. No joke. This lady had it out for me. And I was just like, I just still can see the red ink, you know, circling that. I'm like, I don't know why this woman hates my guts. I don't get it. I don't get it. But it was definitely just another point in my life where I learned that if somebody doesn't like you, they're not going to start liking you. And it's not worth convincing them to like you. And it's not worth the effort, the energy of like subjecting yourself to being around with people that don't appreciate you for who you are.
That's a powerful story, and that's a powerful concept, because I am still, I think, you know, very much, I'm working on it. It's a relationship that I'm working on, but I'm very much, I want everyone to like me. I want people's approval. So I'm just like endlessly curious and fascinated. Like, as you're describing your style of homeschooling, you know, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, what would people think of that if they knew? Mm-hmm. And like, I've got to imagine you get, you know, judgment, and like, how would you deal with that? And I think I'm viewing it from the mindset of how I would. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I put so much emphasis on other people's opinions or thoughts.
Yeah.
That would be really difficult for me in this moment. I'm working on it, but that would be difficult, you know, to really choose a path like that. Well, I'm saying that sitting in a van. So
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter what you do. You're going to be dealing with judgment of others in some capacity. And I mean, I think what you and Eileen are doing is freaking incredible. And if I could get my husband on board with packing our kids in a bus and traveling the country, I would do it in a heartbeat. But you just are always going to deal with criticism. I have, that lesson has been drilled into me over my entire life's experiences, that you're always going to have people that are judging you. And I mean, I've walked into rooms where people are talking shit about how I parent, about how I homeschool. And it's definitely like a visceral feeling of it. I get more mad. I don't necessarily get sad, but I'm more just like, again, the come at me, tell me that I can't. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. But I definitely, and this is just something I'm working on, not to live in spite of like people, and to just do it because innately, it feels like the right thing to do. And it really does. But I think the tell me I can't, I'm going to prove you wrong, is what gives that idea and feeling longevity, you know, to follow through. If that makes sense.
It does. I mean, yeah. Walk us through more of how you process in these moments, or how you think about judgment. I'm thinking of the person listening to this episode, and if they're driving in their car or they're off on a walk and they're like, okay, you know, maybe it's not this style of homeschooling you're talking about. Maybe it's becoming an entrepreneur. Maybe it's becoming a photographer. Yeah. Maybe it's starting a sourdough business. Maybe it's becoming a homesteader. Maybe it's all the different things that you have done. And so for the person listening, but for them, it might be one of those things, might be something else. And then, and then all of the thoughts come in of all of the, but what is this person going to think? What are my parents going to think? What are my siblings going to think? What are my friends going to think? What would your, you know, kind of advice to that person be?
I'm very like, put on the blinders and don't even worry about it. Like, I I've had friends, family, and I think those are the most painful ones when they give you shit for making the choices that you're making. But meditate on it, pray on it, like sit with the idea and what your goal and your idea is. And if it makes you smile, and if you're like, I know in my soul that this is what's right, then who says it's not? Like, I don't know if you have to blur out my hands, but honestly, it's just, you have to do what's right for you, whether that's homeschooling or whether that's sending your kids to boarding school and, you know, whatever it is in between, whether it's a career that you've been working for, whether it's living in a van. And I think that there's so many ways to do life and to exist. We put the limits on ourselves. We are the ones that are limiting ourselves and these ideas. And it's silly. If you see somebody living, you know, in a van, I'm thinking that is so freaking cool. The person in the van might be like, God, this is so dumb. Like, why am I doing this? It's so hard. And the opinion of the other person doesn't matter at all. But I guess the point that I'm trying to get at is, it's like, we're all viewing so many other people's lives through social media, right? And I'm like, I'm not judging that person for what they're doing and how they're doing it. So I think a lot of the judgment is stories that we've made up in our heads before we've even done the thing. And then some of the real judgment does come later. But I mean, if you can battle your own inner critic and inner judgment and stories, like you can battle the real ones.
So, and it sounds like as you're making some of these decisions of the things that you're going to pursue in life, the way that you're going to go about living, you describe this, you know, getting quiet, getting still. And it's like it's a feeling thing, you know, like gut or intuition or whatever you want to call it. Is that what you're talking about? That's what you're feeling and making some of these decisions based on?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, whether it's, you know, intuitive, whether it's, you know, God, the universe, whatever, like, I feel like we all have an inner knowing. And I feel like through meditation, through prayer, you can connect with that instead of seeking, again, the external, like, what should I be doing? You know, what should I be doing? Somebody tell me what I should be doing. And when you have the ability to ground yourself and get more in tune with your intuition, I just feel like you can let that lead you, and you know if something's right and you know if something's wrong. Like, how many times have you like had, you know, met somebody or even just walked on the street next to somebody and you just got like that eerie feeling like, you know, you didn't make the story up. It was literally in passing and you get a feeling. And then on the other end, how many times have you met somebody and you're like, oh my God, like what a light, you know, I want to spend more time with that person. That's a feeling, that's intuition, that's energy. And if you can tap into that, I feel like you can let that lead your entire existence.
I've got to imagine this plays back into your parenting approach, homeschooling. You know, I had a guest on, Martha Arnett, and she talked a lot about, you know, this idea of intuition. And she talked about, especially as kids, we are born with a sense of intuition. We know when we're hungry. We know when we're full. We know when we're tired. We know when we feel safe. We know when we don't feel safe. And a lot of times it's society, parents, whoever, people around us, that kind of take us away from that sense of knowing. Mm-hmm. So I've got to believe that. Is that something, it seems like it would be a byproduct of the parenting style that you are employing, that your girls will grow up and they will have a better sense of that intuition, a better relationship with that intuition, because it seems like they're being demonstrated by their mom and taught what it's like to feel into that, what it feels like, and what it's like to listen and act on what that intuition is saying.
Yeah. I try really hard to live that way as an example, and then also ask them questions, right? Like, you know, like, how do you actually feel about that? You know, and I mean, I struggle in some areas for sure with just parenting in general, but the idea of them making decisions for themselves and not being the intuition, like you said, being cut off, I feel does happen very young, right? Because as soon as we get into a like the routines of what somebody else told you to do, it just diminishes that connection to yourself, right? You have to wake up at this time. You have to be here at this time. You have to be doing this at this time. Like, they don't even have a chance to like wake up and like think about the dreams they had or consider what they would maybe want to make themselves for breakfast. Like, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've now, like, my kids are making their own breakfast, making their own lunches, and figuring out what they can eat and what they need to eat and what they want to eat. I mean, it's not a perfect, like, idyllic, you know, just utopia in my house. Like, I don't want to get anybody confused. Like, it can be extremely chaotic, but the end goal is that intuition and that internal knowing of worth and, the intrinsic validation. They don't need it from anybody else.
Is that sort of how you, define success as a parent? Like, as you think about what you want to instill in your girls, as you think about raising them, as you think about what success means for them in their lives, what is it? What are you kind of aspiring to? Because it seems like you're not, success isn't like a path that it seems like you're pushing them down or wanting them to go down. So what is success in your mind? I've parented my girls well, if blank.
That's a tough question. I mean, I, you know, honestly, and it sounds, and I don't know if happy is the right word, right? Because I want them to feel fulfilled and purposeful in whatever path they choose. I want them to be able to live in a way that they're open to any experience that they want. I don't want them to be fearful of their choices. I don't want them to make choices based on fear, right? I feel like so many of us choose career paths or educational paths or partners or friends based on like the fear, again, of not being accepted into a specific group or not being viewed as successful. And I think I really want them to know that like the only limit they have is like the limits they put on themselves. And I mean, and that goes from, gosh, I don't care if they want to be stay-at-home moms or if they want to have, you know, like crazy, huge careers, entrepreneurs, homesteaders, off-grid living, you know, living in a van. I don't care what it looks like as long as they chose it and they are fulfilled in that experience.
How has this experience of being a parent and raising your kids in this way, how have you changed? How has it impacted you?
Oh God. I am a totally different person. I mean, maybe not totally, but I've changed, I'd say, a lot. Like sometimes I apologize to my husband because I'm like, I am different than when you met me. Mind you, I was 18 when we first met. So I already had a lot of growing to do. But I, for example, this is the easiest example I can give you. When I was 18, first meeting my husband, I was doing makeup, and professionally for, you know, like some magazine stuff, but mostly like brides, model stuff, like just all about, you know, like changing the face, right? Like making people beautiful, taking years off. And I'm like, my mindset has shifted so much. Like, I honestly, I might wear mascara once a week. And that is partially like, oh my God, I have three daughters. Like, my job, I was dedicated like to making women feel better about themselves, but it felt like for the wrong reasons later, right? My little dog, Luna, she wants me. So I like don't even wear makeup anymore because I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't want to my kids to feel like they need to alter their appearance in order to be accepted or thought of as beautiful, right? I don't do, and no judgment for anybody who does, but I'm like, I don't want anything altered or unnatural, like about my body, my face, because I don't want my daughters feeling like they have to go get a procedure done in order to be beautiful and valued. So that's a huge aspect of me that has shifted. I've just become incredibly aware of food. That's another huge thing, you know, that like after becoming a parent, your eyes are just, I feel like for me, we're just open to all of these structures that we have created, possibly with like good intentions, of course. But I think that you can't predict what those structures are going to, what the outcome's going to be. And you can't think that throwing millions of children in the same situation is going to not have different effects on every one of them, because we're all each so unique that we each need unique experiences to grow to our fullest potential. Mind you, I'm grateful for the character building I received throughout the challenges I had in my education. And my mom did offer to homeschool us at one point, but I was already like, no, my friends, I had no friends, Chad. I had no friends. These were not friends. They were frenemies. But I was in the system and in the thought of like, if I don't have these people, who am I? Which is insane to me now. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't want my child depending on their identity through an outside source. And so, yeah, I mean, changed in a lot of ways.
I think, in my opinion, that is a great thing and a beautiful thing. I think that if we are not changing, then that to me is more of a red flag than the opposite. You know, I think that's what we're supposed to do on this journey, is we're supposed to get new experiences and gain new perspectives and change our minds on things, change our approach on things, change our own perspective on things because of the things that we experience and go through. I go back to this, you know, you talked about just the asking the question, why? Someone says do mm-hmm. something a certain way and you say why? That just seems to be more and more evident as we go through this conversation of you intentionally, back to the idea of pausing, taking some time to maybe be quiet and say, huh, why? Why should it be that way? And then trying something else. Okay. Talk to me about homesteading.
Homesteading.
Explain it to me as though I know nothing about it, because I really don't.
Okay, so I always I claim wannabe homesteader. And the reason is because, and that's like, right, it took me a long time to give myself, like, I'm a photographer, right? Like, I feel like I have to get to a certain point until I've earned the title, right? It's in my own head, okay? Some people might consider me a homesteader, but like, I feel like legit homesteaders would be like, psh, you know? She doesn't have her own cow, and I don't. I want one, but I don't have one. So for me, homesteading at this point where I'm at, I have chickens, I have a garden, and I have bees. So for me, the idea is to be as why can't I think of the word? As little dependent. Can you help me, Chad? As little dependent.
Minimally
dependent on like outside sources for food.
Okay.
So one second, can we pause for a second? Cause I got to get my dog. She's scratching at the door and I don't want that to be in the audio.
Okay. BRB. Pause.
Okay. I literally just threw a bunch of treats at them. So I hope it's like, you think the kids are going to be the problem, but it's the dog.
Before you continue, I think you should call yourself a homesteader.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that.
I think you should drop the wannabe. I had a conversation with Tanner Olson, and he is a writer and a poet, and he wrote something about that. We talked about it on the show where he said, you know, for the longest time, he labeled himself as an aspiring writer. Like there was going to be some moment where he was going to, you know, the writing gods were going to say, Tanner, you are now a writer. Congratulations, because you achieved X. And I think someone just said to him, well, are you writing? Do you write things? And he said, yeah, I write every single day. So you're a writer.
Yeah.
So are you interested in the idea of homesteading? Are you taking actions toward doing it? Then seems like you're a homesteader to me.
I appreciate that. And I will lean into that because it's true. And I want, like, you know, like you're saying with about your podcast, right? Like you are a podcaster and you're doing a great job of it. So thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
I think of, you know, it's like, it doesn't mean we can't aspire to be an even better podcaster. Aspire to constantly evolve as a host, and I aspire to do more. You can aspire to do more from a homesteading standpoint, but doesn't mean that you're not a homesteader. So I want to see that Instagram bio change and that wannabe.
I will remove it immediately after this conversation. I will. Okay. I'll keep my word.
So, okay, folks, I'll have her Instagram linked in the show. So we'll have to make sure that we hold her capable of doing that. What is the objective or goal of homesteading? Why do we do it?
So for me personally, it's, I just love knowing where my food comes from, right? So, and I love the fact that like, I can get real dramatic about this, but like a little teeny tiny seed grows into this huge plant that then feeds me, feeds my family. I can preserve it and make it be shelf stable for years. And I just find that incredible. I mean, grocery stores are cool. I still use them. I mean, I still go to Kroger, Better Health, like small. I do search for smaller local stores. Simply Fresh, Greener Pastures, like these places are amazing and they source local foods. And I try to shop there too. But the main goal is, again, so many things, that the health, knowing where my food comes from, the whole process is just incredible to me. And I was fortunate enough, like my mom had a garden growing up, my both grandparents had gardens growing up. So I did see that as an example. And my mom, she would have us like weeding the garden, and it was this like tumultuous work, right? Like we were, you know, sweating and muddy and, but we did it. And my sister and I were just talking about this yesterday. And I was like, I'm so grateful that like they forced our butts out there to help out. I don't know if I would be as into it, as like confident that I could do it if I hadn't done it as a child, right? And so my kids, they love the process too. Like, from seedling to harvesting, they get so excited when like they can just go have a sugar snap pea straight from the garden. And I don't know, for me, that makes me so happy. And I also love teaching them about foraging, like finding food in the wild. I just love the idea of not needing anybody for anything when it comes to feeding myself and staying alive. I don't know. It's, again, I could get dramatic about it. We just finished listening to Brian's Winter, which is a part, it's like a series, Hatchet,
oh, yeah,
The River,
yeah.
Okay. I loved the shit out of those books growing up. My Side of the Mountain, the thought of just like, I've got nothing but the clothes on my back and, you know, the knowledge in my head and like a little knife or axe or something. I just thought that was the coolest thing. And so I like re-realized this as I have been reading and listening to these books with my kids. I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And so, yeah, we forage for mushrooms and like other wild edibles, and we grow our own food and we can it and store it and use it throughout the year. It just feels so freaking good for some reason. Like, it is grounding and it is like connecting to past generations, I feel. And it's empowering to be like, I don't have to leave my house to go to a grocery store. I don't have to pay triple the price for a loaf of bread because I just made it myself. You know, it's just like very satisfying to me. And, you know, when I get a meal that I'm like, I made this butter, I made this bread, my chickens hatched this egg, I'm drizzling honey on this piece of bread from my own bees. Like, I just, I'm like, this is, tastes amazing. This is so good for my body and my mind, my spirit, the whole thing.
Yeah, that is amazing. I mean, I can resonate with in different ways. I think I also enjoy being sort of self-sufficient in that for the most part, you know, we can go off-grid and we've got solar panels that provide us with power and we've got, you know, everything that we need in this van, in this vehicle. So cool. I'm curious about community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Eileen and I have experienced, well, sometimes when you choose a different path in life, that can make community harder. And when you choose, for example, our path, that is, we live in this vehicle, we travel all the time, it's hard to establish a sense of community. What has some of your approach or experience been to, how do you go about finding community and establishing community for yourself, for your girls, because you have chosen to do things a little bit differently? What's that experience been like?
So I feel like this is where social media does come in handy. I found a group on Facebook for like hiking. Oh my gosh, these dogs. For hiking and homeschooling. And the woman who runs it, her name's Molly, and she is also a photographer. And I found this group on Facebook and I showed up by myself with my kids to one of these homeschool hikes. And we've been doing it now ever since. It's on Mondays. We hike almost every Monday since Nora was at least maybe one, so at least 7 years. And, you know, within this group, which mind you, holy crap, has it grown. And there's so many more options to finding community, right? Whether it's homeschooling or entrepreneurship or homesteading, we have this social media tool to create our own communities if we want, and to find communities that have already been created. And I think that that's where, you know, it being the social media technology being like a blessing or a curse, right? Like, we can find what we want to find. And I'm sure, like, for me, being super involved in my actual community face to face is what's really solidified those connections, right? We find them online, but we got to go to them in person, or we have to be able to dedicate time to them. So the homeschool community, super tight knit. I will say homesteading, I haven't, every time I look this way, I'm looking at my garden. But like that, I have dreams of making some sort of community around it where, like, old school, right? Like, you grow potatoes, I grow onions, and we trade and barter and swap, or we share seeds, and it's all very community based. And that's a, you know, maybe down the road, but I hope it becomes a reality.
It's funny how yesterday, Eileen and I were at Mesa Verde National Park in Colorado, and that is home to, there's a bunch of cliff dwellings, and they're from the Pueblan people, and they were for like 1,000 years ago. And anyway, we were just like reading all these different things, and you're seeing some of these ruins of these communities that they would have. And, you know, they're painting kind of the picture of these vibrant communities that existed in the mountains and how people would just be together and share things. And it got me thinking about how, based on what you're saying now, you know, it's like, in some ways, I think there's this part of us innately as humans that wants to get back to that. You know, we were talking about, Eileen and I were yesterday, of just like living back then versus living now. How people were really immersed in nature and their day-to-day lives revolved around nature. And then technology progressed, and now we build all these homes and these structures, and we remove ourselves from nature, and we remove ourselves from people. And so as you're just talking about, you know, the simple act of, hey, why don't I grow potatoes and you grow onions and let's just share? And like, that is community at its simplest form. And that is existing in a community and existing as in nature with nature. It's funny that we're trying to go back to that in some ways. It's like we've had all of this technology and all these things, and it's like, you know, I don't know, maybe we're missing out on some of the core foundational things that we just need as humans to thrive.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that so much of the anxiety, the stress, the health issues that we have that, you know, span so many different, like, they can go in so many different directions, but we've just been so disconnected from community, from like living cyclically with the earth, that it's just like we're dehumanizing ourselves, right? And so it's like, no wonder we have anxiety and depression. My bare feet haven't touched soil in God knows how long. You know, we put socks and shoes on babies as soon as we can. And, you know, I just, there's just a lot of disconnect. And I feel like that way. I love that you have sensed that and felt that even in your nomadic lifestyle right now, that that call and that pull for community and simplicity, because everybody had a role, everybody had a purpose, and everybody was valued. And we've lost a lot of that along the way, whether it's technology's fault, whether it's, you know, who knows what's fault. It's happened and we're here. And we just have to take the steps to like move forward backward, you know?
Probably just got to start asking why. Why are we living this way? Why are we making some of these decisions? Why are we doing these things? And is it really benefiting us? And it seems like the more we ask some of those questions, the more it might lead us to just walk backwards a few hundred years to some of the old practices that maybe we should have never gotten away from.
I completely agree. It's so true. Like I love the question why. And whenever it just keep asking it, just keep asking why and find out why. And I just feel like that can really lead you in one direction or another, and in a good way.
Absolutely. Well, Nicole, this has been awesome. For the record, I think you are one of the coolest moms that I know. I think what you're doing is incredible. I've really enjoyed, you know, I guess this, a lot of this curiosity comes from a place of, I do find myself, and Eileen and I have talked before, I find myself being pulled towards, you know, can I take some kind of a different approach to teaching my kids, and you know, where do we want to live, and we want to have land. So I think this falls in line with a lot of the curiosities that I have and a lot of the ways that I think I'm being pulled to maybe continue to live now and into the future. So this was fun for me to just kind of pick your brain and see how you're going about it. But I really have a lot of respect for what you are doing, the decisions that you have made. I know that comes with sacrifices as well. And anyway, I think it's really, really awesome.
Thank you.
If people wanted to find you, get in touch with you, or kind of just keep track of what you're up to, what is the best way for people to do that?
I feel like Instagram is probably the easiest. Facebook, and I don't get along very well, but Instagram seems to be easy. And then I do have a website where I, like, I should probably keep a little more updated, but I'm on there and then I send out emails. So if you want like a newsletter type situation through my website, which is on NicoleRawlPhotography.com, that's a great spot. And then my Instagram is also NicoleRawlPhotography. So try to keep it simple. And then I wanted to tell you too, thank you so much for having me on here, because I really feel like just having deep conversations is a huge part of what's lacking, right? Like, this is community, whether it's, you know, it's virtual, right? But it's so important because it allows people to reopen parts of their mind that have been buried. And so I love deep, meaningful conversations, and thank you for creating this. And I cannot wait to see how you and Eileen figure out, you know, and maneuver through your future and with kids. It's going to be beautiful. I know that. And also, I've always dreamed if I did live in a van, I would search every town's little farmer's market, and I would load up at farmer's markets. That's just what I would do. Don't know if you guys have thought about it or done it, but you're probably going to find some really awesome local delicious foods.
I love that. That is something that we will have to, and I will be more mindful of now from this conversation. So thank you for that. Thank you for being here. Thank you for joining me and being willing to, you know, these conversations only happen and work if someone is willing to join me in this space. So I appreciate it. I'm grateful. And yeah, this is how I try to create community and create that sense of community while we are on the road. And it's difficult to be with people all the time. You know, we were just with some friends recently, and we're going through a stretch now where we might not see people that we know for a period of a couple of months. And yeah. So this has been a really meaningful way for me to still connect with people and get that deep, meaningful connection that I crave. So thank you for recognizing that. And thank you for being willing to join me here. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm so grateful. Thank you for being the first podcast that I've ever been on. It's very exciting.
I love it. Check mark. And everyone?
Yes.
We're going to check Nicole's Instagram, and we're going to make sure that she gets rid of the wannabe, because she is a homesteader.
Right away. Thank you so much.
I got to tell you, I had a lot of fun recording this conversation with Nicole. She's got a great personality, great outlook on life. Great perspective. She's got a way of bringing, I like when people can bring, you know, a lightness and a little bit of laughter and a fun element to some of these, what are very deep and meaningful topics. It was meaningful to have this exchange with her. And I was telling my wife, Eileen, you know, this is someone that Eileen introduced me to. And it's just been meaningful to meet new people and talk about different things. Every time I do this, I take away something new. And, you know, in this conversation in particular, my mind got swirling as I was thinking about schooling and the role that it's played in my life, the things that it taught me. And it kind of made sense to me for the first time of why maybe sometimes I struggle with my own self-belief or self-validation and why I tend to look externally. And I'm just curious if you kind of think about or dissect some of your own experiences around schooling, or, you know, think about some of the recurring themes or patterns in your life, the things that you think or feel, and ask that question of why. Well, why does that happen? Why do I feel that way? I really love that exercise in this conversation. I think so many of the things that Nicole is doing, whether they're exact things that I'm going to do or not, it's very clear that she's made decisions to think for herself, feel for herself, and act based on what she thinks and feels. And again, no matter if you and I want to do the same things that Nicole is doing, I think that concept in and of itself, we can all apply to our own lives. Let's think for ourselves. Let's feel for ourselves. Let's lean into our gut, into our intuition, and see where that takes us. And I think it will take us down routes into places that maybe we never imagined before, but are likely going to be places that are very fulfilling and very meaningful. And so that's what I'm going to be thinking about as I head out of this conversation and into my week. And maybe you could as well. And I do have a question for you, which by default would make it this week's question of the week, which is, What is a mindset or belief that you would like to instill in the people around you? I'm leaving that kind of vague because, you know, this could be in your kids. This could be in your friends, in your parents, in your family. What is a mindset that you believe in that you want to instill in the people around you? And put some thought into, you know, what would it take to do that? That's something I'm going to be thinking about this week based on this conversation. And I think it'd be a good exercise for you to do that too. If you enjoyed this conversation, the number one thing you could do to help grow the show, expand these conversations to new audiences would be to just to share it with somebody. Send someone a text or an email, share it on social media. I would really appreciate that. And I think, you know, maybe someone out there would appreciate it as well, because maybe it'll introduce them to this conversation that they wouldn't have found otherwise. So thank you in advance for being willing to do that. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to these conversations. Thank you for supporting a show that is about having these meaningful conversations. If you'd like to contribute to supporting the show, keeping the show going from a monetary standpoint, I do run the show from the back of my van. It is entirely self-funded, independent show. There's a link to a platform called Buy Me a Coffee where you can do just that. You can buy me a coffee or two or three to support some of the work that goes into creating this show. Those donations really mean a lot to me. They help support this podcast and help it remain what my vision is, which is to stay independent and be supported by the people who, well, like meaningful conversation. Thank you in advance for considering that. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of this community, and I'll see you next week.